Here buffoon, I be that bite. Feel delicious. I make them laugh. Yet they wonder what's done. He wonder. And I'm brought no colder.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for joining us here on the Trash Mix Podcast, episode 5. What's this episode called, Joey?
So I had a couple ideas that I sent you. The Latinx community might get mad at us for this one, but I came up with the Brown Devil Dolls from Hell, but I don't know.
I'm fucking with that.
Okay. But we might just tone it down a little bit and do something like Roberto Guinard and his dolls or something. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll tell you who that guy is in a moment. Thank you for joining us on this podcast tonight or today, whatever time you're listening. And today we're actually going to have a guest again. This time it's Joey's brother, for those who don't know. Joey's brother, his name's Jesse. He goes by Hack and Figures on YouTube. Say hello, Jesse.
Hi, what's up, guys?
So what exactly do you do on Hack and Figures?
I do reviews on and unboxing on action figures, my collection, stuff that I get, things that I think it's cool that people should see, so... And so
a lot of Sifubi and a lot of like horror toys and stuff.
Oh, collecting, dude. Shit. How long do you think for? Like, I would say okay. So I'm 38. So I would say since high school, like 14 or 15 years old.
Oh, okay,
for
sure. Wow.
Yeah, it's been at least 20.
But
years.
So like recently, I've been doing like the more designer Sifubi stuff for the last like 5-6 years. Yeah. That's what I mainly collect, and that's what I like to put out because there's some cool artists out there.
Yeah, and for those that are wondering, why do we have this toy guy here on the chat, on the podcast?
Yeah, tell him.
It's because we're going to actually talk about two movies involving toys, or dolls, that is.
And killer dolls.
Yeah, killer dolls, to be specific. One's a clown doll, the other one's like a ventriloquist doll. And I figured, hey, you know, Jesse should talk about these dolls.
He's the toy expert.
He's the toy expert, yeah, exactly. So I was like, yeah. So I gave the idea to Joey. Joey was like, yeah, let's do it. And so, yeah, here we are. We're going to talk about Herencia Diabolica, which is from 1994, I believe, 1993.
93, I have it, yeah.
And then the other one is Muerte Infernal, Demon Doll, Hell Doll, whatever you want to call it. And that one is from 1993, supposedly, but it's actually from 1987. So, yeah, let's break down to it.
Yeah, let's get into it. We're going to do Herencia Diabolica first. So, as Armando said, it's early 90s, 1993. Technically, the second release for this sequence of episode, right? And it's directed by Alfredo Salazar, who people would know as Abel Salazar's brother, right?
Yeah, and for those who don't know, the Salazars are very legendary in Mexican filmmaking, specifically horror. So if you know all about Mexican horror from the past, 60s and 70s, the Salazar name should be familiar. And Alfredo Salazar was like pretty much one of the pioneers of that.
And he has a pretty extensive filmography himself. Some titles that I have written down here for him is Una Rata en la Oscuridad, El Charro de los Calaveras, and anything of note that you think people should.
I think you nailed it, honestly. Especially with the Rata one, that one is fucking amazing, actually.
And he also did writing for some lucha movies. He did like Mujeres Panteras.
Yeah, he did a lot of writing, actually.
A lot of Golden Age movies, comedies too. So, so he was the director, born in 1922 in DF. Started in the 40s, as we said. He's like a Golden Age Mexican cinema. And, you know, brothers with Abel Salazar, who was a huge icon. Oh, yeah. The movie stars none other than Roberto Guinard. He was quite the interesting character.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Who was in Muerte Infernal as well as directed it, was in Al Filo de las Machetes, which is a pretty dope movie as well.
I really like that one, yeah.
Also stars Lorena Herrera, who was a singer-actress. I'm sure anyone who's familiar with Mexican stuff,
they, telenovela specifically.
Oh yeah,
she was the blonde bombshell,
and she was also did Playboy under a different name.
You don't talk about that.
Though. Yeah,
that was she that was her twin sister.
Yeah, supposedly, right? she went by Barbara Ferrat or something like that.
Yeah, something with Barbara. But that was her twin.
Yeah, so she says, right? Mm-hmm. We also have Olga Ramirez, and we have none other than Margarito Esparza Nevare, who was known as el actor más pequeño del mundo.
Yeah, he was really tiny and supposedly in the Guinness World Records of this being the smallest actor ever. But I don't know if that's true, though.
I think when I looked it up, he measured like 2 feet, 7 inches or something like that. Yeah, he was
very
tiny.
Wow.
And also has Alan Fernando, who was a little boy who played Roy in this movie here.
And funny enough about Alan Fernando, he comes out in the movie that we talked about last episode, Alimento del Miedo.
Absolutely. I mean, that was kind of the reason why we kind of wanted to do this episode next, kind of do a little bit of a tie-in. Mm.
And then for those who don't know, now Alan Fernando, he goes by Alan Fernando Vasquez, I believe. And he does a lot of voice acting now for cartoons, movies, very popular.
So like most people in the industry, you start off with horror and then you build your way up and you say, fuck horror, I'm never doing it again. Build your name that
when
way.
When I looked at his Instagram, I was like, let me see if he's ever talked about like his movies. No, it's just all the voice acting stuff.
Yeah, I don't want to be associated with fucking Moctezuma or Alfredo Salazar.
That's what it seems like, yeah. Like, interesting.
So yeah, let's talk a little bit about Margarito Esparza. He was born in 1936 in Sinaloa, started acting in 1953. I guess apparently I read that he lived in El Salvador for a little bit.
And, something like that.
Yeah, and like was like doing acting and singing over there and then came back to Mexico and started, you know, basically his career all over again. And this is probably the movie that he's most well known for, I would say, right?
Yeah, like if you look Google his name, pictures of this movie will come up.
And even like him outside of the makeup, like Mexicans have seen his face. Like they know this fool.
Really terrifying looking too, even without the makeup.
Yeah, it's kind of thematically with both movies too. Yeah. Like Mexico has a weird, strange obsession with little people and clowns, right?
Big I mean, time.
Yeah,
oh yeah,
they're everywhere. Whether they're in the lucha libre, whether they're in the telenovelas, they're in the fucking movies. Part of like the ferias that come to the towns, they're everywhere.
And then even better, they mix both of them, right?
In this case,
it's like, all right, we're going to make a killer doll movie, but we can't afford the mechanics. What do we do? Let's just get the little person to play the doll.
And I like kind of like they shape the doll to look just like his body. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, good call there. Yeah, they did almost make him look like that. He has like a little round body.
The round body. Which is the skinny body as
Margarito.
A wrinkly face. You notice that?
Yeah, a little bit.
I mean, they zoom into his face in the first, 30 seconds of the movie. I mean, you have the opening title cards and then it's like his face.
Yeah.
And so for those who don't know, Herencia Diabolica is... It's broken down to just basically being a demonic clown doll who reanimates and kills the women and aides of this household that's now part of an inheritance.
Yeah, other words, it's like Chucky, but not so much like Chucky.
Chucky.
El Chucky.
Yeah.
How do I say this? Like, he was like murdering or killing people that were kind of not friendly or mean to the little boy.
Okay, so funny thing is in the IMDb, if you read it, it's like, okay, I'm the one that actually wrote the IMDb. So if you go to IMDb, you're gonna see it's about a little clown doll that murders people that are cruel to him.
Yeah,
and that's sure enough. It's like anybody that he's killing, it's just people that are kind of fucked up to him.
Yeah, they're like doing weird, like throwing them in the lakes and throwing them in a closet and he's like, just getting revenge on whoever did
pretty
did
much anybody that was mean to him. He's just killing them. It's never nobody that didn't deserve it, I guess you could say. It's always somebody that deserved it in some way.
And it's kind of like they don't really give the backstory of how this clown is like reanimated, right? I mean, there's like they talked about his aunt that he inherited the house with, who was supposedly into black magic, but there was no definitive like she put a spell on him or he was like the...
Yeah, they did mention about the uncle, so maybe the uncle had something to do with it. I don't know. They
like
really... they didn't really go into detail, but they did mention like, oh yeah, there was the uncle too, but yeah, they don't really elaborate on more on that. So I'm going to assume it's the uncle that's possessing the doll. I don't know.
El juguete favorito de mi tía. Desde niño lo conocía. Y entonces le tenía miedo. Imaginaba que su rostro era malvado.
Pues sí. Así sale en la foto antigua.
Al enviudar mi tía, jamás se separó de él. Como si hubiera querido regresar a su niñez. Fue el único compañero en su locura.
Pobre señora, debe haber sufrido mucho. Oye, tu tía practicaba la magia negra.
¿Por qué lo dices?
Pues no sé. Hay en el cuarto de la azotea un sinfín de máscaras y objetos medio satánicos.
Era una de sus chifladuras. Según decían, se pasaba el tiempo invocando al maligno. Pero viéndolo bien, ¿sabes qué? Lo que se me hace muy extraño es que a pesar de todo este tiempo, pues está como nuevo. ¿No crees?
Sí. Qué raro, ¿no?
Yeah,
it's really weird. I don't know. They don't say. They really don't.
Yeah, they don't, and they allude to it, but it's like, one would have to believe that it's some kind of spell, because, or like that the aunt put on, I would guess, because she held on to this doll for so long. And it was, I guess, even Roberto Guinard's character was basically saying, like, his entire childhood, the only thing that he could remember was
the doll.
Right? Was the doll and his aunt, yeah.
Yeah, and his aunt being, like, yeah, into black magic and so forth.
All right, so let's kind of, let's start to break it down a little bit. So this movie opens up, obviously with the doll, right? And then it cuts to this super cheesy ass, like, obviously still shot of a New York City postcard.
I was gonna say, mention that. It looked like it was like a poster that they filmed, because you can see like the ridges of the fold.
It's just like a picture of New York. Yeah,
it's very obviously a postcard, super low budget, you know, needless to say. And then from there, it kind of just starts to build the story. And kind of after he learns of his inheritance, they have these really fucking dope shots of the Calle Independencia and the EFE, where they're showing a lot of like old statues and buildings and stuff that's not even there. Like they had a Christopher Columbus statue there.
Get that
shit out of here.
Yeah. And then they cut into the movie, and then the whole film was just shot in the Casa del Lago Juan José Arreola, which, for those that don't know, it's a cultural center for the University UNAM. And then next to it is the Bosque de Chapultepec. So those are the only two places the movie set at.
So it wasn't a real house then?
Not necessarily. It's just like a cultural center that the university owns. But that is primarily where the movie was shot, in and outside of it.
Because I was wondering, like, when I'm watching it, I'm like, man, like, that's a dope house. I have like a huge lake and stuff. Yeah. And I was like, man, where is this at?
Yeah, not too far from the Bosque de Chapultepec. So it's like all right in that one spot right there. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, and I think I don't know. Do you guys think? I don't know if they shot the interiors in there, though, because it almost seems like some parts, of the things maybe, were definitely in there. Yeah. But like, there's like the bedroom scenes where you're like, there's no way. This just looks like a generic house in Mexico.
Yeah, because the house was too nice on the outside, and the inside, it looked like a regular Mexican house. You notice that shit?
1,000%.
So probably not everything, but for sure the outside was the cultural center.
And it's kind of crazy to think that they were able to shoot this type of movie there, because, like you said, it's part of the UNAM. It's got like a very prestigious history.
Very prestigious history and everything. Yeah, it's so weird.
Like, built it in the beginning of the 20th century. Mm-hmm. Like, very old building, beautiful
very
architecture.
Historical building, yeah.
They probably lied and said they're filming some kid thing, you know, like with a doll and stuff, you know?
Or a film student. I don't know. They're like, oh, we're students from the university. I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah, the main actor looks like he's like.
You're talking about Roberto Guinard?
Yeah. He looks so old. I'm like thinking like, dang.
But he just looks like, I mean, he looks like any Mexican's relative. Like, I feel like he looks like Mateo Victor or something, right?
Yeah,
he just looks like a generic Mexican uncle that everyone has in their family. Which is pretty funny to think, because he's also like very, very awkward in this movie. Like, he's not really attentive to the child. He's not really attentive to his wife.
And what,
like,
does he do? Is he a businessman or something? Because they didn't really say, did they?
So he was a businessman in New York.
Yeah.
And then he
quits the job. Yeah, he quits the job over there to move to the Mexico City house.
And then goes back to the States to do business. That's why he leaves?
Well, he was leaving to like Acapulco.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So it's like he got another job in business, I guess. So that's why he was traveling on and off.
And that's kind of like the first instance of where the doll comes out, is when he gets sent. So he finally gets a job, and you know things are going good. He's like this terrible sex scene between him and his wife that you can't see the shit.
So bad. They were just like hugging, right?
Well, you can't really see shit because as soon as they hit the lights, it just went dark.
But you know they're moving around supposedly. You know?
And you know the next scene is it cuts to him having to go to Acapulco for work. And that's kind of where the story, I guess, the horror part of the story starts. Is when, and then that's when the doll finally comes out.
She starts hearing, like, starting to see the doll, like, in different places. Like, hey, why is this here?
Yeah,
because they find the doll, and then that's when we get the backstory of the doll. And then, you know, they think the doll's gonna be cool for their child, you know, their upcoming baby. But then, yeah, she starts getting scared because the doll's, like, moving around, supposedly.
Yeah, it's, like, different places. Yeah, right? Where she's, like cooking. Wasn't there a scene where she's, like, cooking or something?
She's in
and
the kitchen. Right next in the stairwell.
Yeah. Yeah, as a kid, that actually terrified me.
And, I mean, you know, granted, there's not a lot of suspense in the movie. Like, it just happens. But it's also fucking freaky. Like,
yeah, it's weird. Yeah,
especially the clown doll. Like,
yeah, that's, like, every time I watch that movie, like, when I put it in, like, I go back to when I'm, like, 9 when I was watching. I'm like, this is still kind of freaky.
Yeah.
I'm 34 and I'm still getting kind of scared watching this shit.
As, you know, trauma in Mexico, man. It's like, you know, they go hand in hand. But this is the first death is at this scene, right? So, you know, Annie, who's the Roberto Guinard's wife.
Yeah.
She finally runs into this fool on the stairwell or outside, and then she follows him up the stairwell, and then he appears on the other side.
Yeah.
And then
he just puts his hands up, right, or something.
He didn't even touch her, but
he just scares her. And he smiles, and then she falls really slow.
Yeah, you know what? I wrote a note about that because it's like it kind of reminded me of Psycho. Not as good, but it's like the chafa version, you know. She's like falling back, you know. And I was like, oh wow.
And then he hits him with the
yeah. He just starts laughing, and it's like.
Did that happen or no? I can't remember.
It was it was always like the dream sequence or the nightmare sequence of that. And again, that's kind of where it all sets off, because she dies and now Tony has to start his life all over again. Like the baby was rescued after the fall, but you know, his wife dies and now he's all depressed and sad. And that's when good old Lorena Arena comes.
You got an upgrade.
Yeah, I'll tell you that. His secretary.
Yeah, you got to you got to stop living in the past and live for today. Or what
that? She tells him that straight up, like exactly what you said. And then that's when they start dating. You see them at the Bosque de Chapultepec. They're just like hanging around.
They're like hugging and kissing, but then the little kid's walking all sad. Like,
yeah, the scenes with the kid are funny because he's just like there. And then all of a sudden, that's when they break down to the boy playing with the clown doll, and the fucking doll is walking around with him like normal.
Oh, they're playing hide and seek.
Yeah, they're like playing hide and seek, and I'm like, oh fuck.
You know, it's interesting because they play it almost like Stewie and Brian in Family Guy, where it's like he's like the kid is the only one who knows that this doll is alive.
Yeah, exactly.
And I guess this is where they get the whole Child's Play reference, which I don't know how you guys feel about it, but I don't really see too much Child's Play other than the fact that it's a doll and it's killing people.
And if I recall in the Blu-ray, Roberto Guinard did say that, they were trying to like cash in on Child's Play.
But make it a little different,
obviously. So there is a Child's Play aspect to it in a way, but not so much,
I mean, I can see it as like maybe like he reveals himself to the kid only first, right? Like, and they're like playing and the adults don't believe him, but that's about it, I think.
Well, I think Dolores, Lorena Herrera's character, she's the only adult, really, you know, outside of Annie, who...
Yeah, she starts to suspect. She doesn't really believe it at first, but she starts suspecting, yeah, something like kind of weird things are happening, yeah.
Right? Because she's like locks him in the closet and yeah, asks the maid, did you take him out?
Yeah, she keeps blaming the maid, yeah.
So then that's when she starts getting freaked out. And then what happens after that? Oh, yeah, then that's when she tries to mail the doll outside of the
country. Oh, dude, speaking of that, yeah.
So it gets to the point where she's like, all right, this is getting weird. So she tries to mail the doll outside of the country, I believe. So she wraps it up and everything. She puts the white string on the box, old school style.
Old school style, yeah.
Well, I think, hold on. I think we skipped a scene on that one, because there's a scene where she takes the doll and tries to throw it off the rock.
Yeah,
into,
right before
into
that,
the,
yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
What was that, a cliff or a tree or something? Or
it was like a cliff.
Ledge or something?
Yeah, like a little cliff, you know,
yeah,
that,
off,
that overlooks
right
like that
the
little
water. Right into the
lake.
Water in the bosque, yeah.
That's like, there's right before that, there's a scene where the doll sneaks into her room and it's like,
oh yeah, it's either a nightmare or maybe it did really happen.
Yeah,
we don't really know.
Maybe
but
he's homies with the hell doll.
No, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of yeah, similarities between
this doll goes up on her and starts touching her tits.
Yeah, he's like, he rapes her. I mean, yeah, let's call it a spade,
yeah,
a spade.
Another nerd, yeah, he does.
He rapes her, and again, it's that odd slow mo with the lights switching and. It's a very crazy scene, and then that's when she, you know, decides, fuck this. I've had enough of this fucking doll, and tries to kill it multiple times.
Didn't she, rip his face open and see it's like stuffing was coming out of it? Am I tripping?
Yeah, that was
she's
like,
see, he's fake. He's
yeah, something like that. So she tries everything, and, you know, eventually this doll's like, you know what? I'm going to just fucking kill her.
Yeah, he's like, she's not being really nice, so.
Yeah, so the doll comes back after he... fails attempt at the getting mail out.
Oh no! But didn't he get stolen?
Yeah,
yeah. So that
was the part. She puts him in a box and is gonna ship him. And
the sketchy guy smoking the cigarette.
Fucking Ratero show up and fucking.
And then she's like, "Ah, it's fine.
It's fine." Yeah, I wrote that down because he was like. Opened it up and it was like, what is this? And he throws it in the trash or that and pile then, of trash, whatever it was. And then he gets up.
He gets
and
fucking, yeah. He
fucks his ass up
with a bottle, a broken beer bottle.
It's the best kill of the
soul.
Movie.
Yeah.
Oiga, ¿qué le pasa? ¡Oficial! ¡Oficial! ¡Le acaban de robar una caja que traía aquí atrás!
¡El ladrón se fue por ahí! No, ya ni baila, se fue como rayo, ya ni llega.
¿Qué hacemos, oficial?
¿Quiere presentar su denuncia en la delegación?
Pues... No, no, porque lo que traía no era tan importante como para eso. Eran unos libros que iba yo a mandar al extranjero, así que no vale la pena.
Le sugiero... Que no vuelva a traer objetos en un carro tan descubierto como este, pues se evitará problemas.
Claro, claro que sí. Muchas gracias, oficial. Hasta luego.
Kills him with the beer bottle. He goes back home. She sees the doll with the boy again. She tries to rip the doll apart, and then the doll comes back, and he's like, yeah, I'm going to fucking kill her.
Yeah, this is it.
And
that's
that whole scene
show.
Is just like, man, that's like the best part. Is like near the end is when he's already about to try to kill her.
Like the last like 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. That's like the best part of the fucking movie.
Him doing the
great.
Michael Myers walk.
Yeah.
Well, there's what two sequences where he's chasing people and he's just slowly walking.
Oh, the
yeah.
maid.
Yeah, so he gets the maid.
Oh, yeah, he kills the maid too.
Which she kind of had a crazy kill too. I mean, I feel like the death was kind of reminiscent of like the Omen.
Oh yes,
of the maid when she jumps
out.
Because
he has like telekinetic powers too. Yeah.
But you know what? I want to bring up the boy because he's a little shithead. He could have stopped it and he didn't.
Yeah.
He was just he's a kid. She's yelling at him like, help me. And he's just like smiling.
I think at that point, the kid's just on the clown side.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I don't think he really realizes. I mean, he's a kid, you know, he just thinks that his doll is playing around. I mean, he even said it too, like when the doll was chasing the maid Juanita out of the door, like he's like, he's just playing.
Yeah, he just wants to play. Yeah, that's true.
So I don't think he knew any better. Oh, so he's just sitting there watching this fucking doll kill everybody. And kill people he does. I mean, he gets the mom, he gets the maid, he gets the new hyena.
Everybody.
Yeah, this movie has it all. I mean, when you think about it. As cheap as it is, it's like, man, this movie has everything.
It does. Yeah, I mean, it's I've seen a lot of people ripping it online. Like if you go to Letterboxd, people are just ripping this fucking movie.
Because they were expecting something very different, I think. Especially with the Blu-ray, I think people were expecting a lot out of it.
Well, I think I kind of feel like that's why it's detrimental to a movie to like this to compare it to being Child's Play. Yeah, it may have gotten inspiration from Child's Play, but it's really not anything exactly. like Child's Play.
You could just blame the other movies like Dolls or any other killer toy movie.
There's a whole bunch of them.
You can all blame like the Puppet Chucky Master movies, yeah, Puppet Master,
the Chucky shit, the fucking Dolly Dearest, all that shit.
Annabelle, Jaime's favorite.
we're staring at quite a few dolls in our recording spot right now.
There's a Chucky doll right in
front of Sam. Annabelle.
But yeah, I mean, it's kind of unfair to this movie to rate it and compare it to Child's Play because it has its own style, it has its own story. Mm-hmm. It may have gotten inspiration, but I don't think it was trying to imitate Child's Play.
Yeah, it's just trying to be something completely different. And then from Alfredo Salazar to top it off, I mean, obviously Alfredo Salazar had ideas for it, you know?
That was Alfredo Salazar's last movie too, right?
That was his last movie before he passed away. Yep.
Man, go out with a fucking bang, right?
A farewell. With a killer clown doll.
And so this film, like, it was shot on film?
Yeah, it was shot on 16mm film. Like a lot of those movies back in the day, you know, those straight-to-video movies, video homes. So, you know, they filmed it in, you know, 16mm, edited it, whatever, duped it on tape, and then, you know, threw away the film material. Because, you know, that's how they went. They don't care
that's
about
crazy,
the film.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah, they're just like, all right, we're done. Throw it away.
Well, I think, like, most countries outside of the U.S., people don't weren't giving a fuck about.
Yeah, they weren't thinking about, you know, preservation or whatever, you know.
So that's especially movies like this.
I remember, like going to Mexico and, like, renting these fucking movies, like, spending summers and, like, winter times. Like, we had these neighbors by my grandma's house that were, like, similar to me and Cheta's age. And we would always, they would always rent movies. I mean, that's when I remember watching, like, crazy movies like this and, you know, different King of the Kickboxer, all these crazy, like, movies that I shouldn't have been watching at, like, age 7 or whatever. But we were still watching them. So, I don't know. I just have memories of that.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's like I said, they just duped it on video and they were like, all right, throw away the film material, put it on video, and then, yeah, you know, it's for the home video market. But it was on TV a lot, too, back in the day. Like, when I first saw it, I was like 9, Channel 62, case, yeah, that was like the channel that would show, like, the really gritty stuff, the cheap shit.
Oh, yeah, once one of those movies come on, my dad changes the channel. I'm like, yeah, I'm not watching this. There's no guns or explosions, I'm changing it.
Yeah, so that's how I was exposed to it. I was like, oh, my mom's watching it. And of all people, she's just like, yeah, I don't know. I'm just watching this movie. I don't know. And I'm just, like, terrified watching this shit. I'm like, oh, this is fucking scary.
I mean, those are like we said, for those who aren't Mexican or didn't spend any time in Mexico or grow up in Mexico in the 90s, like, it's hard to kind of state how popular clowns and little people were.
Like, I mean, think about it. Like, clowns in Mexico, like, comedians, right? Like, street comedians. You have street performers that are juggling, jumping through fire, the circus. Yep. Like, so, yeah, clowns were
clowns
everywhere.
Clowns are a very part of Mexican culture, for sure.
That's where I got my clown phobia from, too.
Yeah, me too, actually.
I'm sure you remember this story. We were in my dad's little pueblito, and we went to the circus just outside of the city there, and being a little kid and going there, and I don't know, someone got my attention, so I turned around, and then when I turned back around, a fucking clown just staring me right dead in the fucking face. And when I tell you, I got up and fucking boned out of that circus. I got up and fucking
yeah, we all had to leave because he was too scared.
Was it a little clown?
It was straight out of that movie Clown House. Like, straight out like that.
Oh, Clown House.
Yeah,
oh.
I know. Modern listeners, beware. You know, Clown House is not a very... If you know Victor Selva, you know that story.
Oh, yeah, don't watch Clown House.
Fucking Chomo over there. But, yeah, I mean, it was like... My phobia was like that of the kid in Clown House, where I was, like, deathly afraid of clowns. And, yeah, since I've gotten over it.
But let me question to either one of you guys. Like, was there any, like, childhood toy or anything like that where you were, like loved as just, like, the kid loved this little clown? Like, was there, like, a Bart Simpson plush doll or, like, a my blanket or something like that?
I just liked a lot of my action figures. Like, I had all the Batman figures, you know, from the 90s.
The classics.
The classics. Oh, I missed those. So stuff like that. I never really had a favorite doll, per se. It was always just, like, my action figures, if anything. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't think of anything, like, in particular. I mean, I know I had, like, some stuff, like Scooby toys and stuff like that as a kid, but nothing that I was like, my life was over if I didn't get this fucking, you know, get to play with this doll or whatever.
I do remember that, I don't remember if it was your toy or just, I mean, we pretty much shared everything. We were pretty close to age or whatever. But there was this one Ninja Turtle kind of a toy thing. I know this is random. Sorry that I'm fucking random. But like, I remember playing with it, leaving it, and then hearing noises at night where it was at. And I was scared, so shitless. And then
so it was
the morning that doll was, that toy was gone. Not a doll, it was a toy. It was like kind of like gone, like moved to another different place. I was like, fuck this. And I threw that thing out because I was like, it scared me, you know? And, you know, at that time I was already watching Child's Play and, you know.
Okay, so it was possessed. So, yeah. So it was possessed.
It had been.
I don't even remember which toy you're talking about.
It was a weird Ninja Turtle, like ninja, or I don't know, but whatever.
So basically all of us had some kind of childhood trauma with toys and clowns.
And that's why these movies are so, you know, successful, at least at some level or some degree, to scaring kids, because everyone as a kid loves some kind of toy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure.
And yeah. I mean, so what do you think? Because I think it was in the, was it in the interview with Roberto Guinart? When he was talking, or was it you that was telling me after you interviewed him about how this movie had a very limited theatrical release? Is that correct or is that wrong?
I don't know about that. I never heard about that. He might have showed it at a theater, I'm assuming. But I know it was for the home video market for sure. Because at that time, they weren't really putting movies in theaters anymore. It was all just like straight to video or, hey, show it on TV, you know. So he might have. I don't know. I think he was probably in his interview where he mentioned it on the Blu-ray.
Which is kind of cool to think about, you know, this movie in particular actually hitting a theater in Mexico, and wondering what kind of reactions, right? people would have for this.
Maybe we can hit it in theaters here someday.
Well, B and Mike tried, but we couldn't for some reason. Yeah, but we'll try again one day. But yeah, that would be fun to show one day.
And what do you think about the people who say that this is a SOV movie?
No, it's not. Hey, I don't know where they're getting that idea.
They're trying to adopt SOV to this shit just because it's a...
What's a SOV? I'm sorry.
Shot on video.
But okay, no, it's just...
It looks like it.
It could be, but it's not. They shot it on 16mm, I know for sure. And again, they duped it on video, and then that was it, you know, home video.
So it's definitive. 16mm footage. It's not a shot on video.
That's what I'm talking about.
All the tape heads, you guys were claiming this one back.
Just because of the transfer, it looks like it's VHS. Doesn't mean it's VHS.
Yeah, it's straight up straight to video. And then, like I said, it was always on TV back in the day, I remember. Any chance I would get to watch it, I would watch it, even though I was like scared of it. But then I ultimately realized, it's like, I think I just really like being scared. So I think that's why I like the movie.
I mean, the clown looks kind of cool. I mean, it's very, like... I want to say bootleg looking, but a bootleg looking there Mexican is like, there style, is a bootleg charm to it. Very Mexican style to me. So
no, I get it. Yeah, the colors and everything.
It's like, like orange and green, like the like, random stuff.
Yeah, it's like terrifying. And then when he's like, when it's Margarito in the costume, it's even more terrifying.
Oh yes,
definitely. Well, yeah, once the doll comes to life, it adds like a whole new dimension of terror because he's like actually mobile and running around.
Talking about that scene when he's playing like hide and seek, like you don't really see him moving around. You see him behind like the bushes, so you can kind of see him. Face. And it, like, I remember watching him thinking like, damn, that is kind of fucking creepy seeing that. Because he's like orange, these bright colors, right? And it's just like...
Yeah, it's in the daytime, so you can see him, but not his face at first. You know?
Yeah, and also like in the last scene when he was going after... Doris, is her name Doris?
Dolores.
Like that creepy walk. But he had this weird stance where he had that big ass like combat Rambo knife. I don't know where he got that from.
Oh, I know. He just pulled it out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere, right? Maybe he has that magic power, right? Like the leprechaun where he can do anything. Yeah, he just has this weird stance. He's like walking.
She's like moving the doll around, and the doll's like right there. And then all of a sudden, the knife pops out. You're like, what the fuck?
You're like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought it was kind of creepy the way he was like moving and like he was going so slow
as he was going, but it was still he really got fucking creepy.
And then when he finally got her, like that what I do like though, and I'm a big fan of these and like movies like the dummy drops
when someone
falls
off
something, it's like a straight dummy drop.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan. And there was two of them, I think.
Two of them. The maid one was like the more obvious one.
Yeah.
I think.
And that, I mean, again, I mean, we talked a little bit about this, but that scene was fucking dope. I mean, it, the maid scene.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
oh, yeah. It was pretty. It was fucking creepy. Like, dang. Like,
he basically, like, slowly stalks her through the house. And I don't know why she decides she wants to go to, like, the, what was it, like an outhouse or a basement or something. Just get herself stuck in a corner. Like, what? I mean, you know, and then horror the movie trope.
Like, all these toys, all these, like, little cheap mechanical toys.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that thing was so creepy as a kid. I was like, oh, my God, these toys.
Oh, dude, yeah. Remember
those cheap little toys?
Yeah, I used to get those for Christmas, like from my aunts and stuff over there in Mexico.
Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, they're pretty creepy. Yeah, especially like the little monito ones, you know, like the some kind of character.
I don't know if you remember, but there's like one that's making the Donkey Kong noises.
Oh, I don't remember.
It's
that
like
one.
The arcade. Oh. Yeah. Yeah, watch. We'll play it on the clip right now, but yeah, there's like a, you can tell it's like the Donkey Kong arcade noise effect. Oh,
it's funny because there was also a scene when they went, when Dolores was taking Roy to the feria, when there's like a giant King Kong.
What was that? Was that like, I thought they were going to the zoo or something?
Yeah, that was at the Bosque de Chapultepec. Yeah. Yeah, there's like a zoo there.
Does that and still like, exist? That donkey? Not the donkey.
No, that thing is not there no more. A lot of people that were from there, they remember that. So when they watched the movie, they're like, oh, I remember that gorilla.
Yeah, it looked cool. I saw that and I was like, dude, like that.
Yeah, a lot of those like little animatronics aren't there anymore. But a lot of people have big memories of that for sure. And that was at the zoo.
It looked better than the Universal Studios one.
Well,
yeah. Nah, I don't know that.
It's funny you say that because that's one of the things that one of my takeaways was that this. I'm not a very nostalgic person, but this definitely has like that '90s Mexico feel that I remember. You know, growing up a kid, spending summers and winters in Mexico, where just like the surroundings were super '90s, the clothes were super '90s, but specifically Mexican
'90s. Yeah, yeah, very, because they were way behind. Yeah, like they were like a decade behind the United States at that time for sure.
Yeah, the aesthetics for sure were like
'80s. I really thought when I watched it, I thought that movie was like late '70s. I thought it was like '78, '79.
I don't know about that.
Maybe '80s.
Yeah, '80s for sure. But
well, once I saw Dolores, I was like, oh yeah, this is '80s. Yeah, she looks like an '80s.
Well,
bombshell.
She had like that all white like ruffled bodysuit with white thong, the '90s thong, you know, where it's like not even not really a thong, but it's a thong.
Oh yeah,
that Jaime approves of.
I mean, she was fine. Like, let's she was.
I remember her in all the novelas in the '90s and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, she was a bombshell.
Everybody liked her. I think that's why my mom went blonde at that time. She probably
everyone. I feel like everyone went blonde. My tias, everybody.
I think like, why did my mom dye her hair blonde? And I looked. I was like, oh, I think she was trying to emulate that.
Is she the one in Dos Mujeres, Dos Caminos?
That's her. Yeah.
She wasn't one of the main characters, but she was in it. Yeah, she was in it. Yeah.
And for those who don't know, that's a very popular novela that
General Hospital. Yeah, not really General Hospital. Well, one of those.
Not thematically, but
popularity. Yeah, that is where Lorena popped up for sure. Yeah, in popularity. And speaking of her, she is actually somebody brought her up about that movie years ago. I think it was around the time maybe Annabelle came out. I forgot, or maybe the second movie. they like told her like, oh, do you remember this movie you were in? And they show her like a clip, and she just starts laughing. And she's like, oh, I remember that movie. Yeah, it's so bad.
Like, they always say that, huh?
Yeah, like she just like kept laughing and laughing. And then she's just like, yeah, that was such a bad movie, but I just did it for the money.
I mean, why not?
It was just
right?
like a job. Like, that's what she was saying, you know?
I mean, Roberto Gannat had basically had the same idea. He was not a very big fan of this movie.
Yeah, it was weird when they interviewed him. He's just like, yeah, you know, it was a job.
I mean, in the interview that's on the Blu-ray, for those who have it, you know, watch it. And if you don't have the Blu-ray, you know, you definitely should buy it. Highly recommended. But there's an interview with Roberto Gannat where he basically was like, yeah, you know, we copied Chucky, and the writing just got really bad. And he assumed that production just kind of fell apart, and that's why the movie just like the story went nowhere.
It's just funny because he says that, but it's like, you were the one involved in all that.
Yeah.
Like, he's trying to say it's somebody else's fault, but he never says who. It's like, I think it's you. And it is him.
Well, no one wants to take responsibility for a stinker, but
it's like, you're the one that produced it, you're the one that co-wrote it, and you know,
and yeah, the star.
So, yeah.
Well, from one Demon Doll movie to another Demon Doll, this is 1987.
Yeah, so they filmed it in 87, and then we'll get to the 90 part in a moment, but yeah.
Filmed in 1987. This one is called one of the three titles that I know of, Hell Doll, aka Demon Doll, aka Muerte Infernal. Which was kind of confusing when I first started watching it, because this is the first time I had seen it, and I didn't know that all, like, the kind of the backstory of the different titles. So I was like Googling Demon Doll. Like, where the fuck is, I can't find this shit
like
anywhere.
Demon Doll is the only one that shows up on.
Well, not even that. It was like, there's another a movie called Demon Doll without the D after demon. And I was like, why can't I find this fucking movie anywhere? And then finally, that's when I realized, like, oh, it's a different title. When I was looking up Roberto Guinard's credits, I was like, what the fuck is Martin Fernandez? And I clicked in. I was like, oh, what the hell is the fucking movie?
Yeah, that's how it was. That's kind of how people know about it. Like, those that have seen it, they just know it as Muerte Infernal.
That's the original title?
It's a bootleg title, because that's what Guinard told me when I asked him about it. But that is the title people know about it, because that's how it was released on video.
So it just stuck.
Muerte Infernal, yeah. But it's originally titled Demon Doll, because I actually have a one-sheet poster that proved that this was the original title. And then Hell Doll was a DVD release that Guinard put out. Or he supposedly didn't put out, as he's told me. But his name is all over it. So yeah, there's different titles, but Martin Fernal is the more common title since it's on IMDb.
And that's the one. That's the version that got put onto tape. You said,
that was
right?
The one that got put onto tape. Yeah, from American Cine Video, if I recall. Yeah.
And okay, so that's, you know, the three titles there, and this was co-directed by Roberto Guinard. Credited as Roberto Guinart with a T.
Oh, yeah, I was wondering what the heck that was.
Yeah, and then it was actually a guy named Ronald Werthein who actually co-directed it.
Who I couldn't really find much information on
either.
Yeah,
so that's the thing. I looked him up years ago. I was like, who is Ronald Werthein? So I looked him up, and from what I saw, it looked like he did one episode of the show Hora Marcada. Like, he had a credited role on there as a writer. And then there's another guy named Ronald Werthein from New York that did porno in the 70s. And the funny thing is, when I talked to Guinard about, like, oh, Ronald Wertheim, he's like, yeah, it's just some guy from New York I know.
Oh, so it was the porn
guy. So it might have been the porn guy, yeah. But I'm not sure, but I think it is, yeah. It
would make sense. I wonder if that's because of the weird
sex
stuff. Well, yeah, there's definitely some sex
stuff. So that's when I started thinking, I was like, it might even be just this guy, you know?
Okay, that's interesting. So I wonder if he was hired with the intention of this hitting, like, the international market only. Because it was shot in English
originally. It was shot in English originally, yeah, exactly.
Oh, so I wonder, that's okay, so raising a little interesting thoughts there. Okay, and so this was written by the director of Herencia Diabolica.
Yeah, Alfredo Salazar.
Alfredo Salazar.
Yeah, he made the idea up, I guess. And then Guinard wrote the script with Wertheim or whatever. But this is an idea from Alfredo Salazar.
Which is pretty cool. I like this movie a lot better, but It stars there. Now this is where things start to get a little weird too, because it stars, you know, there's a couple people in here, but there's a lot of tie-ins with the cast members. Okay, so let's see if we can break it down a little bit. The main star, Benny Corral. Yeah. Was in Total Recall. He was in, obviously, this movie, Muerte Infernal. He was in El Virus del Poder, and he plays Lawrence in this movie. And then you have his mom, Erica Carlson, who was also in Total Recall. She was in The Devil's Reign. She was in Demonoid. She was in Cyclone.
Dang, so she has a
She has a very good resume. And yeah, it also stars Roger Cudney, who, once again, was in Total Recall.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roger Cudney, for those who don't know, yeah, he was in a lot of Mexican movies too, but always as an American
Was he the character. Doctor? Is that the one?
Yeah, he's the doctor. The white-looking guy, yeah, because he is white, actually, yeah. But he was an American actor living in Mexico for the longest time, so, yeah.
Yeah, so three of the main stars of this movie were in Total Recall, albeit in smaller roles, but... Roger
should have had Danny DeVito play the doll then.
Oh my God, Danny DeVito is cool. Roger Cudney also was in Rambo 2, Perdido Durango, Mary Mary Bloody Mary, which we talked about in the Moctezuma episode, mm-hmm. Amityville 2, which was, in my opinion, superior of the Amityville movies.
I can't even remember that one.
There's a lot of tie-ins, because there's a incestual subplot in Amityville 2, as well as there's an incestual subplot in this movie. So there's a lot of tie-ins here. And, of course, we have Aurelio Perez, who plays Yermo, the killer doll of killer this movie.
Or ventriloquist dummy, whatever you want to call him.
And he was in a couple of movies, too. Los Campeones Justicieros.
Yeah, he was one of the little luchadores.
El Rey de Monterrey. And
there's some other stuff, too. He's not credited, and I have seen him before. But he's always like been in the background mostly, not so much in front of the camera. But he's been in other movies as well.
Okay, so he has quite a good resume. Okay, yeah. Let's break it down. This movie is in short about a teenage boy living in the house of his mom, that doubles as a experimental theater. Mm-hmm. And
it's a doll shop.
Yeah, and it's a doll shop as well. And he basically falls off the deep end, and shit kind of goes crazy from there.
Yeah, he gets like, I don't know, he starts to feel like he needs to, but in other words, he's just horny. He's a teenager. He's starting to, you know, get these urges, and then he starts to, you know, think about his friend who's a girl, and she tries to, like, you know, give in to, like, oh, you know, I'll sleep with you. And then he regrets it. He goes to his mom, and then he starts having this weird, like, relationship with her. He starts to, like, touch his mom, too.
Yeah.
And then he becomes obsessed with, like, the ventriloquist dummy that's in the basement. She tells him, no, I don't want you to have it. But then she gives in. She gives him the dummy. And then that's when all the weird shit starts to happen.
I want to go back, towards the beginning. Like, I noticed, like, how do I say this? Like... When he's like riding his bike and stuff, and he's like getting bullied, mm-hmm. or it seemed like he's getting bullied. No, they're like calling him slang, like they're calling him these weird. Yeah, I don't want to say it, but they were saying word, you know,
yeah,
derogatory words towards the LGBTQ community.
And I was just like, that's what made me kind of confused when I was watching it, because I was like, he's like, he has that girl that he has a. I don't know if he has a crush on her or she likes him.
It's typical teenage shit, right? Yeah. I mean, you know, not to say that it was okay, but it was part of the vernacular of that time to. When you didn't like someone, you're calling them you're calling them
names or whatever.
Mm-hmm. He is kind of an isolated kid, and we later learn that he's schizophrenic. But I mean, it's pretty clear from the get go. You know, the first opening scene, he wakes up and he's having a conversation with one of his dolls, or I don't know what it was, in his bed.
Oh yeah, it's like a little dummy. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And you know that. I mean, that kind of sets the tone for what this movie is. What's gonna happen in this movie, because he, you know, like I said, he's isolated. He doesn't really have any friends. He's part of this theater/dollhouse that has no patrons whatsoever. Like, they're running this theater that no one goes to see these shows. It's just him and him Margaret, and his love interest.
Yeah.
And and with an overbearing mom as well, who's going through her own tragedies. I mean, she has a husband who died.
Yeah, she seems to, like, she hasn't been over it. Like, she's still struggling to, like, cope with his death.
Oh, yeah, very much.
So that's why she's babying her son so much.
In a weird way. Like, it gets burial
too,
ground
yeah,
weird.
It gets too weird, yeah. And I don't think she realizes it until he starts to act kind of weird with her.
What I saw was a man with a great big baggy pants and a lady on a horse, of course, of course.
What are you doing now, Mr. Clooney? It's still early.
Can't sleep. Too excited.
Too excited for what?
We're going to begin another play. A brand new play.
You mean another day, don't you?
Another day, a brand new play.
All right. Hello, mister. Take off the phony lashes.
Hello, brother. Take off that mustache, fool.
Hello, sister. Take off those dark rim glasses.
Hello, mother. I knew it was you.
Shh. Let's begin the day.
The play.
Go to sleep.
Can't. Not sleepy.
Not for real, you dummy.
Oh.
Saturday, no school.
Yeah, and so, I mean, there's a backstory of his dad who we don't, you know, obviously the dad is dead, so we don't really see him. And we don't hear about him too much, but, you know, they give some kind of a backstory if he was some kind of, do you remember? I can't even remember
he
now.
Was he was like a Spaniard, I know that.
He was like a Spaniard who was into experimental art as well or something like that.
Yeah, he was like an artist, just like, you know, his son, you know, into theatrics and the arts.
And that's when the love affair between mom and son happens, and it's interesting that you said that the other co-director was a porn director, because golden age porn fans, or anyone who has seen or bought the Taboo box set from Vinegar Syndrome, would recognize there's a scene in here where the son and the mom, you know, he's in bed and the mom comes in and she's like, oh, you know, son, talking to him or whatever. And then he just starts grabbing up on her boobs and, you know, yeah, trying to
starts
trying
kissing.
They start making out. It's and like it's uncomfortable.
And it's like it's almost a shot for shot exact scene in the first sex scene in Taboo between Kay Parker and Mike Ranger. And it was like, I mean, identical. Like the lighting was the same. She even had the same blue gown on. Like, I mean,
interesting.
I
haven't seen that, so
me either.
I don't know if that was deliberate or not, but I mean, it was. If you go back and watch it, it's almost a shot for shot.
There's no such thing as coincidence. So,
damn philosophical over here, philosophical ass fool. But yeah, so that's kind of the beginning of the incestual love story between the mom and the son there. And who knows, maybe that's kind of one of the reasons why he kind of like lean schizophrenic. Like his mom was so overbearing and so protective of him that he didn't really get a chance to be like a normal teenager, it seems like.
Yeah, like he couldn't really go out other than with his friend Margaret, and that's the only friend he has too. And she even like wants to be with him, but he kind of just doesn't want to.
He's weird. Yeah
like he's just like afraid of her.
She was not bad looking too, so he's tripping.
Yeah, and like she even like let him, and he just like felt weird about it afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he rents to her after his mom finally gives him the okay to use this. No, she didn't give him the okay yet. But he had already learned of the doll, and he was like trying to tell his mom, you know, I want to use this doll as part of the show. And he runs away because she doesn't let him. And she tells him this whole secret about this doll or whatever. And that's when him and Margaret start hooking up. And
yeah,
I mean, she was like the one person. She was like the Jenny to Forrest Gump to you know, in Lawrence's life, right?
Yeah, that's a good way to describe it. Yeah.
Lawrence, what's the matter with you?
How come you came here?
Oh, well, I have an idea for a new play.
Oh, what is it?
Well, you see, there's this doll in the... I found a doll in the house. I don't know, my mother must have forgot about it for a long time. I found it in the storeroom. You should see it, Margaret. It looks so real. I mean, it's, I don't know, it's as big as a... well, it's almost this tall. Really. Look, it's something like a clown. It's dressed in a gorgeous costume, like of the time of kings and queens.
Oh, a jester, then. A dwarf.
Oh, yeah. How do you know?
From books about artists with paintings in them, Lawrence.
Oh, yeah.
If this all is what you say, then how come your mother forgot about it all this time?
I don't know.
What's the matter, Lawrence?
What's the matter with you? Don't touch me.
You can sleep here if you want. Oh, my mother will understand. I'll tell her something. My father goes at work when it's still night. Do you want so? I mean, you don't have to if you don't want to be touched.
But yeah, I mean, that's kind of the beginning half of this movie is kind of setting up all the madness that happens on the second half of this movie, because it's kind of just like, you know, this happens and it cuts to the next scene and then this happens and then, you know, it doesn't really pick up steam until we get the official backstory of Yermo, the doll. And that's kind of the turning point of the movie. And that's when basically the mom comes in and gives this whole backstory about, I don't know if it was like the high priest of somewhere in England or something, right?
Something like that, somewhere in Europe.
Yeah. Who basically used the identity of a real jester, like a little person jester, and created this, you know, supposed doll in his image. But I guess the real mystery is it actually his spirit in the doll, or is it not his spirit in the doll?
And so the corpse of the queen's favorite, that wicked-witted juggler, Yermo, was given to me by the queen in her very person to require of it a porcelain patina, which would create the unquestionable illusion that it was not the actual corpse of the buffoon, but that he had merely served as a model for Her Highness's new doll. And since the infamous dwarf had been frozen dead in life by the king's doctor, using the preservative method devised to prevent the decay of the holy remains of kings and high church dignitaries, Yermo's remains would now serve to provide the queen with a charming diversion, made infinitely more spicy by the notorious scandal surrounding the trickster's peculiar death, for the rest of Her Highness's illustrious life.
Yeah, I was really like confused by that. I was like, is it the doll? It was so weird. And then remember that scene where they're showing him killing the lady, like with the wig and everything?
Yes.
Yeah, that was not actually in the Muerte Infernal VHS.
Oh, wow. So okay.
This was on the DVD. So when I first saw the DVD version, I was like, oh, shit, I never seen this part before. So it's like Guinard just added the scene in, I guess, as a deleted scene, maybe? I don't know what it was, but it was weird.
Did they get more backstory or something?
Yeah, so that did give me more of a backstory. I was like, oh, cool, okay. So he is something from the past, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was never in the VHS, so this is something new. Yeah.
I thought it was, like, maybe his father's spirit or something was in that doll.
No, it's, like, from the past, like, from the, what is it, like, the
1800s? Yeah, it was, like, a very colonial era.
Very colonial, yeah, something like that.
Yeah, figure. I mean, he's dressed up, like, he has, like, the white wig.
The
like
wig. The yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And yeah, and like I said, I've never seen
and the Rambo knife.
Yeah. Back in the day when I saw this on VHS, that was not on there. So when I saw this DVD, I was like, oh, wow.
So what do you think, so there's three different versions of this movie. So, and you said that they're a bootleg, but how would they add extra scenes if they didn't have access to these scenes?
Well, according to Guinard, I mean, that was not his DVD release, but that was him.
So someone just magically found a print of this movie
print
right? And added the scenes.
Yeah, so I think they shoot it on. It. Yeah, I think it was shot on 35. It looks like it was shot on 35 for the most part. And I guess this scene was probably cut, and then maybe he found the material and edited it. I'm not really sure, but it's him.
It has Obviously, to be.
It has yeah, to be no Guinard that put it in, but he says it wasn't him.
that scene is weird as fuck because it kind of intercuts with like a matador.
Yeah,
in a bullfight and like, you know, killing this bull. But it also, this is when we get the first, you know, action shots of Yermo, and he's like stalking this girl and basically rapes her and kills her as well. Like,
yeah, really brutal.
Yeah, like he like stabs her in the chest. Slices and starts her. To like cut off one of her breasts. So I can imagine they were like, yeah, cut that shit out. Like, we don't want that in the movie. Especially if this
has... on Sunday after church on TV.
Because did this have a theatrical release?
I mean, from my understanding, it did, but probably very little bit. Like, you know, it's an independent production, so probably not a lot. And in English, I know that for sure. And then after that, it just kind of disappears. And then it just came out on video, you know, with this really weird cover.
That's what I thought it was weird, too, because watching this, it was like... English. I was expecting it to be in Spanish with like subtitles, just Spanish in general, but it was like, oh, this is in English?
Yeah. In the VHS, it's Spanish. Like, they dubbed it, obviously, with the original actors and everything. But then there are some scenes where you could tell it's like overdubbed. Like, you could kind of hear the English parts. So, but yeah. So it was never released in English before on video up until this DVD came out. This DVD-R or whatever. Yeah.
So they definitely cut that scene out for the theatrical release.
More than likely, yeah, because I have never seen that before. I was like shocked when I first saw it. I was like, "Whoa, what the fuck is this?"
Yeah, and so that's when we, you know, like we said, that's kind of where the story of Yermo is immortalized, I guess, or basically the backstory of why this fucking doll exists in the first place. And then after that, it kind of cuts back to a hospital scene, and this is where they officially say Lawrence is schizophrenic. He's crazy, like, you know, he's not...
he's got to be locked up, and sure enough, they lock him away.
And the mom was like, wasn't she, like, kind of, like, in denial at first, kind of?
Yeah,
she's
talking to
the doctor, sure. She's like, no, you're crazy, like...
Yeah, she's, like, against it, but then ultimately, he's still there, you know?
Yeah.
Yesterday was fine. Today's in a hospital, and you're a doctor. What do you mean by fine?
A state hospital, and I'm a psychiatrist, Mrs. Mercer. Now, when I say fine, I mean fine physically for a young man who's quite sick otherwise, which resulted in his driving his bicycle off a park bridge on purpose, as a witness has reported. Not an accident, but a suicidal symptom of that illness.
How can you claim something like that so damn quickly, Doctor?
Why all the anger, Mrs. Mercer? I'm simply giving you my professional diagnosis based on many years of treating schizophrenics.
And then she brings him stuff.
Yeah, that was the weird part. It's like, okay, he's schizophrenic, but yeah, sure, bring all his fucking dolls over and let him run a theater for the nurses and patients of the shit. And then, you know, Yermo, that's when he's finally unleashed, is when they're in the hospital.
Child's Play 2.
Yeah.
Or no, is it 1?
Part 1, yeah.
Was it a nurse that comes into his room?
Yeah, the nurse. She's very flirty with him too.
Yeah, and Yermo's like, yeah, we're not having none of that. Beats her with a toy.
While going like, like weird, like he's like mumbles, right?
Yeah, he like mumbles, and then he tries to rape her, but then he can't because he's a doll.
Yeah, and then he just fucking kills her instead.
Yeah, he just kills her, and then he steals the car keys to get out.
Was it like a nutcracker or something? What did he hit her in the across the head with?
It was that dummy that he had in the
beginning. That's right.
It was like a dummy.
Once again,
head.
It was a clown head. It was a clown dummy.
Yeah, the clown dummy head.
That's the same one from the beginning of the movie when he wakes up and he's like talking to him. Yeah. And that's kind of sets the tone for the second half of the movie where, to me, this is where it becomes like a crazy art house horror flick to me. Because then, you know, there's a lot of like nightmare sequences and then... The doctor, I don't know, he had like some like secret love affair with one of the other doctors, you remember?
Something like that. They were having an affair.
And like the mom was like, I don't want to hear about it or something. She was like, I don't know. There was a scene where the doctor came and would try to like give her the full story of Lawrence escaping and, you know, trying to find him in the house. And of course the mom was not gonna give him up. I mean, she was hiding. I don't know if she was willfully hiding him in the house or not?
I think she was because she was like giving them food.
Oh, she was giving them food.
She was like serving them food, I think, if I recall.
And then this is where it gets a little metaphorical. The doctor closes the door on his love affair, and he's got his own skeletons in his closet. He opens the door, and a fucking skeleton comes out.
Yeah,
and he has a fucking heart attack and just dies. Which I, you know, surely was a metaphor at the time, or they were trying to go for a metaphor, but pretty cool sequence. I mean, there's edited very nicely and surprisingly a decent prop. I mean,
it looked good.
The skeleton looked really
and the
good.
Music too, like the not the music, but like the what do they call it when like those the sounds, you know, like
like those, you know,
I don't know what they call those.
Yeah, everything was edited perfectly, actually. Like, they were definitely trying to make a good movie here, not just some low-budget schlock.
Yeah.
They were trying to be artsy, trying to be scary.
Well, so, yeah. I think both movies had pretty good music scores.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, the Herencia Diabolica was, like...
Gothic-y, kind of?
Yeah, I guess you can say that. Yeah. I mean,
it's funny, though, because that music in Herencia is in other movies, too.
Oh, is really?
And it's like
so Mexican
even,
library.
It's just like Mexican library music. Yeah, it's so funny.
Find it. Rendezvous. We gotta find it.
For real. Yeah, it's in other movies, like action movies and dramas. So I've heard those. Yeah. So like later on in my viewings of Mexican, I was like, isn't this the music from Herencia?
Oh, that's hilarious.
And okay, so then the doctor dies, and then there's a another scene with Guillermo the clown or the doll or whatever you want to call him, where he's hiding under Dr. O'Hara's bed.
Oh, that part is a beautiful.
That's probably my favorite scene in the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, granted, it's a rape scene, but I think it was executed perfectly where the doctor's kind of like, you know, she's feeling herself. She's feeling sexy in bed. She's trying to go to bed, whatever. And he just pops out and it's like super creepy, like jumps on her. Trying to like undress her.
He tries to you know, force himself on her. But again, he can't because he's a doll.
So what? So do you think his soul's transferred to that doll or something? That's or maybe he turned into a doll or something?
I mean, they never really say, but it's like, it's obviously, yeah, he's still a doll though, overall. So he can. It's like he wants to rape this woman, but then he can't, you know?
So let me ask you this then. Was the doll real or was it in or was the Lawrence's mind making him believe that there was a doll?
I feel like it was just something where it's like up to the viewer because they never really do specifically say what's going on, you know.
I mean, they allude to it kind of being
at the end. They do actually, especially at the ending, but
because there's like a scene in the basement where he's laughing, like the camera's moving in 360.
Where they're all laughing.
And he's laughing together, but like you never really see them in the same time. It's kind of like, you know, back to back, and they're laughing. And I interpreted it as, you know, because of his schizophrenia, the doll was like an apparition of his alter ego in his mind. Because of how overbearing his mom was, you know, he turned to violence or whatever.
So there's that. And then me, I don't know. I just always think it could be both. It could be him being schizophrenic and then there's a supernatural thing going on. I don't know. It could be anything, though. You can interpret it as much as whatever you want, that really. But I think Joey's interpretation does make more sense, though, if anything.
Was there like a scene, I think it was the scene with the... with the nurse, right, where he's got like she's coming in or whatever, and he's like talking or like his lips are not. Maybe was he a ventriloquist?
Oh yeah, he's wearing like a mask. Okay, at first, and then he's not talking.
Because you can hear like different voices. Yeah, and I was like, wait, what's going on here? Like, is he talking or like are the
it did look?
Talking?
But then it did look like he was doing like a ventriloquist thing going. Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, I think I don't like to, you know, pretend like I'm Siskel and Ebert over here, but. I mean, I think this one is pretty, you know, it's pretty fair to say that the subtext in the movie is alluding to something else. Yeah. Because, like the scene in the hospital when the horny nurse walks in, he's not really talking, but it's his voice. And then it's kind of alternating with Guillermo's voice, too. So you don't really know who's talking. And then I kind of interpreted it as because Guillermo couldn't actually, you know, penetrate these women during the rape scenes, you know, earlier in the movie, Lawrence was saying how he couldn't
right.
He couldn't have sex. He didn't feel comfortable having sex.
Yeah.
Unless it was with his mom, which, again, I mean, it's just probably, I mean, I don't really know much about schizophrenia, but I'm assuming that this is like his alternate reality where he thinks he's Guillermo the doll, or somehow the story, you know, when the mom tells him the backstory of Guillermo, it kind of like ingrained in his mind and he went.
I think you nailed it actually. Yeah. And like I said, this movie does try to tell you a good story, you know. This isn't just a quick cash in on a doll movie or anything like that. It's trying to give us a story, you know, an entertaining story, a really weird one, but really good.
And that's kind of the contrast between Herencia Diabolica and Muerte Infernal, where, you know, Herencia Diabolica, it's, you know, kind of, it's an exploitation movie, really. And then this one is more, almost has like a European feel. When I was watching it, I kept thinking of this would be a great double feature with El Asesino de Muñecas. I don't know if you've seen that one.
I've heard of it. But
yeah. Which was released by Mondo Macabro. Really dope movie. Almost, I wouldn't say it's the same thematically, but it's it also deals with a guy killing people that he thinks are dolls, or he thinks he himself is a doll.
Yeah.
So it was. I thought that was a good.
A good comparison.
Yeah, a good comparison for those who are familiar with that movie.
He could have, they could have been inspired by it for all we know.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it's, it was a dwarf. The sinful dwarf.
two smaller maniacs, you know?
Yermo really did look like the sinful dwarf.
So yeah, he looked just like the Mexican version.
Yeah, he's so, the paisa version.
Yeah, we have another small person playing a doll here.
He was a super maniac, that doll.
Yeah, he but he's, you know, he's bigger than Margarito. I mean, Margarito was like super
skinny.
Tiny.
Yeah, yeah, he was tiny.
And this fool was like a frail. Like a beefy buff, like little person.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think out of the two, I would say that Muerte Infernal was my favorite of the two that we watched.
Yeah, for me, it's like I have a lot of nostalgia for Herencia, so I'm gonna go with that for me. But Muerte Infernal is definitely one you have to watch for sure.
Yeah,
because it's like this is a good movie. This is not cheap. This is not just, you know, a quick cash in on another movie.
Yeah,
this is actually a fucking great movie. Good story, good production, good actors.
And what about you? What do you think?
Herencia, for sure.
Herencia Diabólica is the better of the two?
This is cheesier for me. Like, I liked it more.
You like the cheesy stuff.
I guess I'm once again proven to be the pervert of the group.
I mean, the other one was good, too. No, don't get me wrong. It took me 2.5 times to watch it to really understand it compared to just the one shot. You know, I mean, I've seen it when I was younger, obviously. But
no, I know what you mean, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I think, like you said, I think this second movie, Muerte Infernal, has a little bit more.
It's deeper. It's way deeper.
Way deeper. Mm-hmm. I think the production was actually a lot better than.
They had a money for sure. This is 35mm, whereas the other one's 16.
And so this one for sure had a limited release, right? Like
it had to have some kind of limited release, like I said, especially in the States, since I do have a poster and everything. And it's like, okay, this looks like a theatrical poster.
So obviously this part, you know, like most Mexican movies, as you guys have probably learned in the last couple of episodes, is shot way before it was actually released.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I guess limitedly released in theaters in Mexico and then straight to video home in 1992.
Yeah, they just dumped it on video. But Guinard said it was a bootleg, so I don't know. That's where I'm a little confused, too.
So he's basically saying that this movie doesn't exist in
complete
home video at all.
Yeah, and then he denied about the DVD. I'm like, but I remember you posted the DVD, but okay.
Okay.
Is he the type that's kind of like ashamed of like the movie?
I don't think so.
I don't know. He's just weird, like I said. Like when my interactions with him have always been strange, even from back in the day. So for those who don't know, I mean, I've had contact with Guinard for years.
Is he still alive?
Yeah. He's still alive, yeah. The only reason he, like, me and him never talked was because I had actually uploaded Herencia on YouTube, like, a long time ago.
And he was like, hey, I am the...
Take that shit down.
Take it down.
Basically, yeah. He was like, oh, hey, can you just take it down? Because I'm trying to sell this movie, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, yeah, sure, whatever. And then I told him, like, oh...
But let's be friends first.
Yeah, I told him, like, oh, hey, I'm, like, a fan of your stuff, by the way. I really like your movies. Like, oh, thanks. And we like connected, and then he added me on Facebook.
Thrice face,
I'm sure Joey some of the stuff he was said to me, like just really random messages, nothing bad, nothing weird.
No,
just
nothing
like,
bad.
Just really, you know, really odd, like
odd. One of those fools that's like socially awkward type.
Yeah, yeah, like I don't know, like, was he trying to like be cool with me or what? Did he want to work with me or what? I don't know. It was just so.
You
weird.
Want a trash mix to release it?
Maybe. I don't know. We gotta 4K, get him.
4K restoration.
We gotta hit him up. We gotta get him on to do an interview on
the
show.
That'd be sick. Yeah.
I mean, if you guys want, I don't know.
If the fans really got to demand it, hit us up on the email and you know, tell us that you want to listen to.
Yeah, I would like to have him on the show and then talk about this movie more, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think you know, if he can come on and clear the rumors and give us the truth of what actually happened with this movie, that would be dope.
Yeah, because he might tell us another story. I don't know.
I wouldn't doubt it, but I do think that the Muerte Infernal should be released in Blu-ray capacity because I thought the movie was fucking dope.
I think people
dope.
Would like it. Yeah, for sure.
This is screaming for Mondo Macabro to release this. And I do think that the majority of fans, while they were shitting on Herencia Diabólica, I think they would enjoy Muerte Infernal way more. Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it's kind of funny too because Roberto Guenard has a cameo in this movie.
Very small.
He's the postman that comes in.
And I was gonna bring him up too. Like, he's kind of like a jerk.
He is. He's like in the beginning of the movie when he actually brings the doll to the house. He brings Guillermo to the house, and he's like, "Hello, like, where the fuck's everyone at? Like, I'm not gonna be here all day. Like, you know."
Yeah. And he sees the mom, and then he
throws the box and shit.
And then he's trying to like hook up with the mom and shit. Yeah.
Call me later. Didn't they give him like a Chicano accent or something?
Yeah.
It's a weird ass accent.
And that was his actual voice, so he knows English too.
Where the hell are you? Come on, time is money. Hey, listen. One of these dolls can sign this shipment for me. Oh. You want me to put this somewhere for you? It's pretty heavy. You won't be able to carry it. Okay. Next time, thanks for the tip.
Oh, even better. So he can do an interview in English?
Yeah.
Yeah,
for the non Spanish speaking listeners, we can get him on.
He'll probably say, "I don't speak English."
No English.
He's the
type
that'll do that. Like I said, he's a little bit strange.
It is funny, you know. I guess we're cutting back here, but in the beginning scene when he has his cameo, when he brings in Guillermo, the address on that box is for Harris County, Houston. I don't know if you noticed that.
Oh, I did see Houston. I didn't see Harris.
It was really weird. Yeah.
And so I was like, oh shit, I wonder if this was shot there. And then, no, this is very obviously not shot in Houston. This was shot in Mexico.
But, so weird.
Yeah. But like one of you guys said, it is like a, probably for the international market. So yeah, it's like it's trying to be American, but then it's not clearly shot in America.
Yeah, because yeah. Does Mexico have P.O. boxes? I don't think they do, right? I mean, not that I can ever
but
recall.
Everybody looks at Jaime. Like,
I know. Jaime, what do you know?
What do you think?
Do you know what they do?
But yeah, so I mean, it's... This one feels like it was definitely made for the international market. Porno theme subplots and everything. You had an American co-director.
And then American-looking actors, too.
Yeah, American-looking
all,
actors.
They're all, you know, white-looking.
English dialogue. Mm-hmm. So hopefully this one can see the light of day because I think this one is highly worth it. And there's a lot to like about this movie, so...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know. I guess one of the things that, you know, we were, you know, wanting to talk about was these two dolls. I mean, they're pretty iconic, you know, imagery.
Yeah, I feel like they can.
Why haven't these been released on a fucking toy or something?
I don't know. I was just thinking the same thing, especially the El Payasito. Like, he's such a cool looking character with the colors and stuff.
Yeah, that has potential for a toy.
Oh, it has a huge potential. Not just in Mexico, but out here.
Like a real one. Like big a time. Like a NECA toy or something.
NECA. No, I don't know about NECA, but Creature Bazaar, if you guys listen.
Oh, yeah, shit.
Get some Mexicans, some Mexifubi on that one.
Mexifubi, damn. Is that a market? There's a whole thing?
That's like a slang term for the Mexican vinyl.
Okay. Mexican vinyl. Yeah. Oh, those vinyl are like, those old like lucha toys?
You know what I'm talking about. When you get those Mexican toys, vinyl toys, and you smell it, and it has that distinct Mexican
smell.
It smells like that. But I think it'd be a cool character. I mean, even the what's his name? The jester from
Yermo?
Hell Dog.
Oh, yeah, Yermo.
Yeah, like even him, he has a cool kind of a look, you know, like he has like the Edgar cut.
He does.
Has an Edgar cut, and then he has like they're not lips, but they're like hearts or something.
His makeup is on his lip is painted like a heart.
So it's like shaped like a heart and then the pale face. Yeah.
Yeah, those would be kind of cool, I think.
Well, you got people you know in that.
Yeah,
you
got to let them know.
You
got to start egging them on, because that would be dope. I'd jump into the toy world if they release these ones.
I mean, shoot, even Severin. Maybe Severin can release some stuff like a little mini, three-inch, you know, monito with the 4K release.
4K release.
Hey, Martin Infernal has potential though for 4K.
Because it is on film, right?
So there is film material. Oh, yeah.
Do the material still exist, you think?
As far as I know, yeah. Because I know this is on the same catalog as Herencia is.
Let's get it done.
It has to be done.
Would the Cineteca have that? Or Nuna?
No, it's not them per se, but There is a film lab that has it, I know for somebody sure. Yeah, somebody has it. Like yeah. It's the same right holder as Hedensia, so.
So, yeah. Okay, so it's probably available to buy then.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah. So there's material for sure.
Well, hopefully one day that gets released because I can almost guarantee that people are going to be asking for this one, especially just off of the description alone.
Well, once this episode comes out, everyone's going to be like, oh, I want to see that.
Or
is it hard to find that dissuaded movie? Is it out on DVD or
like,
VHS? Something?
It used to be bootlegged a lot, like back in the day. It's more thing for now. I don't know about now, but yeah, it's not easy to find though, for sure.
When I was Googling, I found like a site that had like a DVD-R for sale. But the site looks so old that I'm like, there's no way that people are running this website.
Yeah, you're going to pay for it and just never see it.
And just never hear from them or get it or anything.
The DVD-R, the Hell Doll one, yeah, I don't think it's even for sale anymore. For the longest time, at least. Because it was like 2000... I don't even know. It's just like a while back. But I know it's not there no more.
Let's get a Trash Mix double feature, man.
No. Hey, that would be
a great double feature.
This would be a great double feature.
Yeah, one day. So
you never know. Keep an eye out at a theater near you.
Let people know, you know.
Okay, well, with that, I mean, hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Hopefully you seek this one out. I definitely do not have a copy of this. Wink. But don't ask to get it sent to you. Go out and do some research. Or try to buy the DVD-R on that one website. I'll link you to that and tell me if it works. And we can tell people to
put
go
it on
watch
the
it there.
Link, the description.
And with that, we'll I guess we'll end it, man. We'll do we have a pretty good episode for the next month.
Yeah, that was all Joy's idea.
This is my idea. So you guys are either gonna fucking hate it or you're gonna fucking love it. And I think it's gonna be the latter, but we'll see. December is gonna be a good month. That should come out fairly soon.
It's a little bit romantic this time, actually.
Yeah, we're going drama.
We're going drama.
Trash doesn't only mean horror and sleaze. You know, there's trashy
Armando
drama
has a heart.
Out
okay,
there.
So yeah.
Armando's a lover, man. He's a lover.
Trash Mix. I always tell people, Trash Mix is for lovers.
There it is.
There you go. That's the new T-shirt, dude.
And maybe after watching the movies for December, you guys will pick up your hyena and I don't know, maybe conceive a child. I don't know.
Bust out a cassette from your dad's collection and make that child.
All right, and with that, let's drive it home. You know where to find us. Armando on Instagram as Trash Mix.
I'm on Blue Sky now too.
Oh, Blue Sky.
Whatever that is.
What the heck is that? Is that the new thing everyone's talking about? The new Twitter. Is that the new thing everyone's talking about?
The new Twitter.
I was trying it out today. I don't know. But if you guys wanted to follow me,
it's official.
I'm just going to probably use it as a podcast thing.
There it is. Perfect. I'm on Instagram as Cheddar Brown. And of course, my brother here, Hackum. Tell them where they can find you.
I'm on Instagram, Hackum Figures, with a dot in between the hack and the M. And I'm also on YouTube, so if you want to check out some of those toy reviews, I'm on there.
We'll have a link in the description to your YouTube, so people can find you there and watch all your Sufubi reviews.
And they're not lame videos like all the other ones out there, you guys. So.
No, yeah.
Shots fired. They shooting.
And yeah, I just want to give a shout out and thanks to Armando and you, Cheta, for inviting me to do this.
And then big shout out to Jaime for having us here in West Covina Heights
with the Liquid Deaths.
He stocked us up with Liquid Deaths and opened up his West Covina Heights house. And it's kind of fitting that we're doing this episode in here, too, because there's fucking Annabelle dolls and
Chucky
dolls and Sam. Billy. And what's the fool? The fool from Trick or Treat? I don't know.
Sam.
That fool.
We got a lot of toys here. Yeah, very appropriate tonight.
Looks like me, but nicer, like cleaner. That's nice.
All right. We'll see you guys for the next episode and tune in.
And then also, and if you guys find out if there's a P.O. box in Mexico, email Cheddar Brown. He loves emails.
I don't know if I do. We've gotten a couple emails, and I'm like, no. Everyone's been nice, so please constantly hit us up.
Oh yeah, hit us up, and don't forget rate, subscribe, share with your friends, share it on your story on Instagram.
Yeah, please write a review.
I think people need to know about more about cinema, especially Mexican cinema, because it's a lot of the stuff is getting forgotten.
Yeah, thanks for everyone that's been listening so far. We're on episode 5, so I guess we're on a good path so far.
Yeah, people seem to love it.
And now we're doing 6 next week or 2 weeks from now.
We gotta figure it out, but it's gonna be a good one.
But again,
we're
getting this far off.
And yeah, so
yeah, thanks for listening, guys.
Cool, peace,
deuces.
Próximamente estrenaremos.
Frente a toda esta multitud que los aclama, hay que tener alma de temerario para poder amar, para expresar tus sentimientos con el alma, más allá de una canción.
Es que este amor que nos tenemos es responsabilidad tuya.
Y para poder aliviar tu soledad cuando amas a una mujer que pertenece a otro hombre.
Moviste tantas cosas dentro de mí.
No sabes eso cómo me asusta.
Filmo Imagen presenta al grupo musical más importante de la década, Los Temerarios, en su mejor película, La Mujer de los Dos.
Te pudiste haber muerto y yo sin saber por qué.
Tú me sigues queriendo. No es posible que hayas olvidado nuestro amor.
No, es que no te puedes ir de mí otra vez.
Vive con Los Temerarios la traición de una mujer cuando las drogas son más fuertes que el amor.
Tenga mucho cuidado. Ella es una mujer muy hábil.
Quiero que sepa que Ana es mi esposa.
Creo que debo de irme.
Sé que usted lo ignoraba, pero ahora que ya lo sabe, cuidado. No se le vuelva a acercar.
La Mujer de los Dos.
Sí, doctor, tengo de hecho un proyecto muy especial. El más importante de mi vida.
Vive la traición de un amigo cuando el público decide que tú eres el mejor.
¡Que los mates, te digo!
Usted y yo nos podemos matar hoy, pero Ana no regresa mañana.
Tal vez tenga razón. Pero pídeme una disculpa por haberme robado a mi mujer.
La Mujer de los Dos no es solo una película de amor. En ella encontrarás también dolor y violencia. Los Temerarios en su más excitante aventura que los transportará más allá de la vida y la muerte. Los Temerarios. Adolfo. Gustavo. Fernando. Mario y Carlos, acompañados por un fabuloso reparto con Hugo Stiglitz, Roberto Palazuelos, Elizabeth Katz, Wolf Rubinskis, Arián Pellicer y Gerardo Vigil, La Mujer de los Dos. Véala próximamente en su cine favorito.
Marco Musical y Jalisco Internacional orgullosamente presentan Cómo fui a enamorarme de ti. La primera superproducción cinematográfica del grupo más popular de Latinoamérica, Los Bukis.
Cómo fui a enamorarme de ti.
Ahora con ustedes, Marco Antonio Solís.
Sí, aquí estamos tus amigos Los Bukis en nuestra película Cómo fui a enamorarme de ti. Pedro Sánchez.
¡Vénganse, nos llevan!
Pepe Guadarrama. Eusebio El Chivo Cortés. Roberto Guadarrama.
Vente con el juguete que te tengo una super tarea.
Joel Solís.
Ni te imaginas, Porky, dónde tocábamos nosotros cuando empezábamos.
Y tu servidor, Marco Antonio Solís. Te invitamos a que vengas con nosotros a las giras que hacemos por diferentes lugares. Diviértete con nuestras aventuras y bailes. Acompáñanos en nuestros romances y sueños. Veamos juntos cómo operan los modernos piratas. Piratas de música.
Jefe, la grabación quedó perfecta.
Quiero que saquen del autobús la copia de las matrices del nuevo disco.
También te contaremos un poco de nuestra historia y nuestros inicios.
Algún día tú querrás un cariño y no hallarás.
En Cómo fui a enamorarme de ti, Vive con nosotros nuestras alegrías.
A ver, un re por ahí. Por favor, ya no.
¿Y por qué no? Nuestras tragedias.
No te mueras. Porque este es mi último viaje, Tigre.
Colaboran con nosotros en esta película Lourdes Munguía, Jorge Rusek, Arturo Alegro y José Luis Cordero Pocholo, entre otros compañeros y amigos. Acompáñanos en esta película que nosotros, los Bukis, con tanto cariño, hemos hecho para ti.